Tuesday, June 14th, the first day of my vacation, began with that spirit of elation that all vacations should have. I was free and the days were mine. Not a mark on the date book, except Friday night and possibly a busy weekend at the ranch with Lyndon and Guess until the cutoff date of Monday, June 26th. I went into the kitchen to make some coffee. But these remarkable children of ours, Lucy and Pat, not only don't drink liquor, they don't drink coffee. Therefore, they pay no attention to a coffee pot, or to coffee for that matter, though they had bought a can for my benefit. But alas, the percolator wouldn't work, so I was about to leave the kitchen in defeat until I ran into the Secret Service, and he brought me in a large paper cup full. I hadn't been in the kitchen except to talk to the cook for years, really, and it was a bit of adventure to be taking care of myself, even in a small way. I failed miserably, but then it wasn't what I was really concentrating on. I consoled myself. I was to drive out to the ranch with Roy for a full day's work on the house. I collected my straw bag with its myriad plans, notebooks, and memos, started to the car with it, and put it down against the wall in the lovely little backyard, and went back in to get my purse. Just a few minutes elapsed, and when I came back out, the yard looked like a fresh fall of snow. White papers were scattered everywhere, and Kim, Astro, and Yuki were busily chasing their own favorite pieces, tearing at one of Roy's carefully executed plans. There was nothing to do but be convulsed with laughter and run from dog to dog, picking them up and stuffing them back as carefully as possible in the straw bag, while Lucy and Pat emerged from the house looking helpless and saying, "Mother, you didn't leave it out here, did you?" These dogs are the greatest source of joy to them. And I, in my few days here, learned to understand completely that just as much fun as Beagle used to be for us, and they'll be part of a family legend in years to come. Lucy showed me what she'd been getting for Father's Day, and it was really quite a production with her. For her daddy, she had a charming little picture frame. There was no picture in it. There would be one if the baby came before Father's Day. If not, she planned to put pink velvet as a liner across the top and blue velvet across the bottom and a question mark on each and compose a poem to go with it. For Pat, she had a ridiculous card purporting to be from the three dogs and an elegant tuck shirt from her. She'd made several trips to town doing her Father's Day shopping. I rode with Roy in his little sports car. The country is dry and sere, and here it is only the middle of June. Not a drop of rain in June. And we ache for the green springs of other years. At Johnson City, we rode up and down by the street trees. They're doing splendidly and evidently being watered well. Even the little park is flourishing. And the boyhood home looks fine. There, in the backyard, is the last of a really very creditable display of wildflowers. Mostly Gallardia coreopsis and Mexican hats. A few wine cups and paintbrush. And earlier, some bluebonnets. But it just shows what water will do. Water has kept many of them alive until now, though it is nearly time to mow it. But we hurried on to the ranch. There it really hurt to look. The river is low. Water is not going over the dam. In fact, it's probably 6 inches below, and a rim of muddy bank shows everywhere. The grove is fairly green, and the crepe myrtles are glorious. We drove up the runway to see the results of my last June and July's spreading out of mulch. Millions of different kinds of wildflower seeds. It had been only tolerably successful because of the drought. They're nearly gone now, just about time to mow. But we did get some. I would grade it about C-, I suppose. But far up on the runway, in the rocky caliche soil on top of the hill, where nothing will grow, we got out of the car, and I showed Roy, by one triumph of the season, dozens upon dozens of the tiny little fragile mountain pinks. By now, they too have gone to seed, except for a few, but you could see their little skeletons there. And they had been little soft pink powder puffs, tiny pink flowerets in a mass, about the size of an orange or grapefruit, a couple of weeks ago. Enough to keep me hopeful for trying again next year. Back at the house, we spread out our plans and went to work. Our work table is in front of the picture window in the dining room. And then we went first to my bedroom, setting up a bridge table and two chairs and going over each detail right there before our eyes. Mr. Wyrick to call on in case we were in doubt. Frequently using our steel measuring tapes, drawing in the exact place for beds and dressers and so forth with red crayon, measuring shelf spaces for the Dowdy Birds and the Lowestoft, calling Ashton on the direct line to find out just how many inches there were, deep, wide, long, at the White House for these treasures. At last, moving the filing cabinet out of that south wall entirely, and putting it around the corner in the closet where one enters from the swimming pool, feeding then we'd taken a great load off our backs, deepening my closets by 3 inches in my dressing room. And then, at long last, after a break for coffee, picking up the bridge table and marching into Lyndon's bedroom, spreading out the plans and repeating our process. I know Mr. Wyrick will rejoice when we depart, but we're so lucky to have him, because I feel that everything we ask him to do will be done, and he'll look at all the material for faults with an eagle eye. The stone fence is completed. It's quite handsome, I think. I believe we'll give Lyndon the privacy he wants, and Lyndon's view is going to be superb. We stopped for a hamburger lunch. I'd only had coffee and juice for breakfast and was ravenous, and kept right on into the sitting room and the baths. Finally, about 4:30, I was too full of details to be thinking very well anymore, and so I said, "Roy, let's take a break." So we drove up the Blanco Road. It's a quiet, serene road, and I love it. And suddenly Roy slowed down and said, "Look, there on the right, and a little swale, was a whole meadow full of bluebells. Cup-shaped, purple-blue flowers, in abundance, and just what I was trying to transplant to the ranch. So there's proof of me on both sides, at Mrs. Gibson's in Johnson City, and here, that they do grow in this country. Sometime soon I shall come back with Betty Weinheimer. She will know whose land it is, and hopefully they'll let me dig up a few for transplanting." We continued on to Albert and drove into the old school grounds. Now it's deserted. Lyndon went to school here when he was about 12 and 13. Learning a bit of German, riding the 7 miles on a donkey and getting roundly teased by his schoolmates for it. It's one of the old stone structures with the Germans built in the last half of the 19th century, and it has a darling little cupola. Unfortunately, there's a tin addition that robs it of much of its charm. Now, with the advent of consolidated schools, it's deserted and crumbling. We went back to the ranch and picked up James Davis and rode to the end of the runway to see if the bluebells, which Dr. Donovan Carell had so generously driven some 400 miles or more to dig up and bring to me and plant, were living. Alas, they were not. James had planted them close to the cottonwood tank. He'd watered them 2 or 3 times, he said. But the ground was hard as concrete and very dry, and they were dead.
We went down to the birthplace. The big live oak that Mr. Carter had planted just off the southwest corner is flourishing. I'd called Mary Ellen to see if we could stop by there to evaluate her lighting situation in her bathroom, because the moment of decision has come for ours, and I never have really had a dressing table that was just right with a lighting that is just right, and I'm trying to achieve it this once for the rest of my years. How I love the long summer twilights. At close to 8 o'clock when we arrived, it was still the lovely clear light of soft summer evening. Inside there was a great surprise. Neva and Wesley were having a drink with Mary Ellen and A.W. They quickly brought us one, and the next hour was a happy mixture of chatter. We hadn't seen each other in about 3 months, and of careful inspection of Mary Ellen's dressing room and bath. Final decision was we'd go forward with her lights, and I will just put Edison's carefully drawn little plans in a drawer, or maybe they will be used at the White House. A little before 9, Roy and I left the Morsons and went to Austin by the Oak Hill Road, best frequented, more scenic, one of my favorites. Arriving at Lucy's, too late for dinner, I thought. There they were, sitting around the kitchen table, Lucy and Pat and a couple of their young neighbors, and Lucy proudly brought out a roast that she had cooked, and we all had huge roast beef sandwiches and glasses of milk. This family is long on milk, and I had brought a basket of peaches, delicious Stonewall peaches, so we all feasted on peaches and cream and lively chatter. Lucy is in constant motion. She has so much energy. She's busy all day. Little household jobs, or visiting, or going to the beauty parlor very often. And she chatters like a happy little magpie. While I, so serene and pleasant is the scene, almost look under the bed for the bugaboo or over my shoulder for disaster, untrusting that such happiness can last.
The peaches had been sent to the ranch with the compliments of the Sweeney Ranch, a very kind and graceful thing for them to do. On their ride, Roy and I had stopped at their place, and I had gotten out to thank her. I feel sad, and in some way that I have failed, that the building of the park should have caused rifts, hostilities, dissension among neighbors.